You're listening to a University of Minnesota Bookstore author event podcast, recorded live from our location in Kauffman Memorial Union on the U of M's Twin Cities campus. For more information on upcoming author events, please visit our website at bookstore.umn.edu.
Our guest today, as you know, is Michael Walsh. He's here to read from his new book, The Dirt Riddles, which won the Miller Williams Arkansas Poetry Prize this year. He is also the author of a chapbook entitled Adam Walking the Garden. He's a recipient of a Minnesota State Arts Board Fellowship and a residency at the Anderson Center for Interdisciplinary Studies. He's a graduate of Knox College and earned his MFA at the University of Minnesota. He currently works as a course coordinator in the English department here at the university. We're really happy to have him with us to do a reading and then chat and answer questions afterwards. So please welcome Michael Walsh.
Hi, everybody. I want to thank the folks at the bookstore for helping set all this up. Thank you. So I wrote a book about essentially growing up gay on my family's dairy farm. I wrote it because I didn't think anyone else had written it. And when I was reading a lot of pastoral poetry or poetry about the land, I didn't really find myself or any of my experiences in there. So what I really tried to do in writing this book was to update what you might consider to be the pastoral tradition and to insert myself into it. And the first poem I'm going to read from the book is First Kisses. Out of sight, I kissed brown, crumbly pasture, gray coral of antlers, daddy long legs, cupped quivering, but not my mother, father, or any boy. I kissed light condensed in milky quartz, limestone pregnant with shells. Puddles where drowned earthworms settled, soft roots and rotting sticks, but not my face, puckered in the car's scalding mirror. I kissed white cats who slept underneath cows, rusted rain barrels where June bugs scrabbled in water, and fresh mud. Telltale impressions I wanted you to find. Also, when I was working on the manuscript, I talked to a lot of people who grew up on farms to see what our mutual experiences were, what we had in common, all that. And one thing that came up over and over when I talked to people is getting shocked by an electric fence. And I determined that it wasn't even just a memory, you know, like in your mind, that the experience is something that like lives on in your cellular memory, like in your hands or whatever part of your body got shocked. So I tried to write a poem about that experience. And it's called Grounding Number One. Ticking louder against the electric fence, weak in the crossed mess of stems, weeds break under your stick. An underground signal beats unbreakable in the roots. Brush a leaf, a wire by accident, and you turn the wrong dial. The sudden, terrible sun pounds the air white, the ground black as static. For hours after, your fingertips babble, their prints strange as radio waves. And this next poem, the title is also the first line, so I'm being a little tricky. And I think it's an example of ways that my intuition developed when I was a young kid. After his lessons from the belt, my mother would always sit on the bed and spread out the great map of his fault lines, that webwork of unpredictable tensions. We studied where the quakes were most likely to occur, in barns, fields, near sheds. We learned to sense the shifting, the slow grind of plates, the opening chasms of his hands. Bully. I turned myself into a rock. Tim grabs me from the floor. We go to break what litters his backyard, glass bottles, dismembered doll parts, plastic soldiers in a skirmish, his brother's toys. We bust the buildings. We roll through trenches on both sides. It's love. I'm helpless and strong when he squeezes. He lifts me to his brother's face, those sweet and full lips. I love Tim's fist. The next poem I'm going to read is a really good example of how sometimes you have to rehearse a poem over and over. I had some lines in this, from this poem in my head, and I kept writing them out in different forms over and over, and they wouldn't turn into a poem. So I kept writing it, and about, 10 days later, I was working on it every day, and about 10 days later, suddenly, the poem just kind of like wrote itself in about 15 minutes. And I was happy about that when it happened. I wanted it done. It's also one of the first of some cow poems that you'll hear from me, because I write a lot about cows. It's called Against Pastorals. I'd lay my hand on her warm hide, and inside her a calf thrashed like a carp, and a hoof would kick my palm, a splash no one else could hear. I'd leave to feed the newborns, able to turn but just barely. Plastic tags popped through their ears, and black scabs in between, where I burned off their horns, white nubs soft as roots. That scorched fur stank like human hair. I turned and knew what I had to celebrate. Outside I saw our pastures, fences, the gates that connected it all, and the stock pond, brackish water where the cows would stand for hours swatting flies, a kind of time their tails kept, no different than the piece of straw in my mouth, a dirty reed I sucked and blew, tuneless. Wind. If you sprint fast enough, the corn runs with you, whole rows quick on their roots. Slow down and they jog, calm and breathless. Stop and they turn to walls. Hands on knees, you pant, and all the leaves, like wings, beat wildly. Shore. The deeper I walk into the field, the higher, the wetter the blue stem, the more leaves flash their weed-tangled silver. Hidden everywhere, swaying, thistle and nettles bristle, all spine and stinger. From ankle to thigh, they scratch their names for tadpoles that turn to beetles, eels to roots, and fish to mice. Now touch this slash, that sting. The mouth can't speak them, but the skin, that strange tongue, starts to mutter. Here are a couple poems about cows or subjects related to cows. Fly grammar. The blowflies begin in the sweet meats of small-boned bodies. In the cages of plagues God hand-feeds, they nip at his hand. Loose barnside, they land on the yellow glue strip, twisting. Mouthless tongue, they kiss and become. Black vowels whining. Because my poems are short, you're going to hear a lot of them. Though I've written a whole book about growing up on a farm, there, in a lot of ways, isn't a lot that I miss from there. You know, I don't really miss any of the hard physical labor. I don't really miss, you know, all the work that we did for no money. I don't miss any of those things. But I do miss some things about the cows, and this is one of the poems about that. Mud, apples, milk. Of all things to miss, it's silly to miss how cows drowse in mud. They blink slow as toads. Instead, I should miss light on the blonde corn or trails of gravel dust that rose like kites and vanished. But I don't miss that. I miss how I could bring bruised apples, press them like smelling salts to sleepy noses. You had to let go real fast or risk a finger to the lick and snap. I miss their udders too, the mud fresh as wax on the swollen skin. Each day I broke the seals with hot rags and milk flooded my palm, a white creek down the gully of my wrist. The next poem is a portrait of my mother, who worked really closely with all the animals on the farm, probably more so than I did, and more than my father did. Morning milkings. Mother slaps every sleeping cow with a chapped, leathery hand, once, twice, as many times as it takes. Then, with the lightest touch, she announces to the first startled flank her bucket, her brown paper towels, her iodine, her plastic syringes for the sick. She washes each udder, overripe and leaking, faster into the rag with each wipe, careful of any touchy warts. One long squeeze into her palm and she's done. The milk's ripe and opaque in her lifeline. No flecks of red today, no odd clots. A skeptic, she pushes her greasy glasses back up her nose, closer to her nearsighted eyes, then tosses the sample, quick as spit. One of the most startling images from my childhood has to do with my mother artificially inseminating cows, something that veterinarians usually do, but she took a class to learn how to do it, and so sometimes I would walk down into the barn, and there would be my mother with both of her arms inserted into a cow that was in heat. And I didn't know anyone who had written about this, so I decided I had to take a stab at it. This poem's called Surrogates. Mother would push her hand inside the cow slow, up to the elbow, make the animal arch its back to the right curve for her silver gun, steady and quick as a stud. Months later, her child slid loose from the womb. I stood with my mother, watched the cow push and push that perfect head past the sopping braid of a gutter tail, and oh, how his eyes would roll open, a stare, both sad and amazed. In the sink I mixed that first milk, tap water, and his ration of sticky, sour powder. My hand tight on the nipple, he pulled and pressed so hard, the bottle dug into my ribs, even popped open and spilled. As a special treat, I offered my fingers, their skin wrinkled and tasteless, but like a teat. Blanket game. Sundays, I'd creep onto the blanket and wait, in the warm wedge between my father's knees. I didn't know when, but they'd snap shut, gotcha, and I wriggled, helpless in that cotton placenta, dark and humid between his thighs, my breath gone with the first squeeze, funny, then longer, and too long, and impossible. My lips mouthed swear words, my palms pried at his kneecaps, and all he did was grunt, then clamp tighter, his leg muscles so strong I went slack in their playful hold, and spilled loose, panting, when he let me. Pin up. I'd help my best friend unfold the center girl, that cowboy hat in her hand, his stare demanding and blank. From her pages, I learned how to pose down on my knees, take off my clothes piece by piece, purse my lips and pout, her red press-on nails suddenly sharp on my fingers. Even my skinny chest would wobble, fake with breasts, until I got comfortable on the page, male again, and watched his shaking hand undo each cold, steel button. People tend to ask me about the last line in this poem and what's going on in it. I'm not going to say anything in advance. You can tell me what you think if it's not clear to you. It's called Weekly Horoscope. Grandma spread the local paper across her vinyl tablecloth, the way a psychic would prepare her worn stack of cards. Then she flipped to the obituaries, past the magnifying glass, back and forth over the black facts, in search of that wonderful day when she'd read her name and know. There's a word in the first line of this poem that means the same as rheumatic, as in rheumatic fever. a table prayer. Buckets of manure, the roomy broth God made the world from, what we spread on gardens, tree rows, so the leaves and fruit ripen. Oh, blessed manure, we gather your new flesh, sweet corn and greens. We set our table. On the farm, I lived for a time with my great-grandmother, who I mentioned as my grandmother in the other poem. But grandma is more poetic than great-grandmother. It's fewer sounds, so I just call her grandma. Anyway, when I lived for a time in her house, she kept a slop bucket. She kept a slop bucket that is unlike any other smell that I've experienced in my entire life. It was the bucket sat in the kitchen, and all of the food scraps went into it for exactly 1 week, and then the bucket went out to feed the pigs. And the sour smell of it would spread throughout the entire house and really permeate, it seems like, even the curtains. So whenever I think of that house, I would think of that smell. And finally, I tried to write a poem about that smell. It's called Food Chain. Nothing would keep in that kitchen. The walls sweated mold, and flies hatched from cracks like spores, even in November, when frost bloomed on the stuck window. In a day, bananas went black, their peels slick as dead fish. Milk turned chemical overnight. Each morning, I held my breath, tossed whatever was foul into that bucket. Bad fruit and milk, green yolks, membranes of lettuce. In the house, it was refuse, but in the barnyard, it was champagne I could pour over the crowded snouts, the splash of amber foam, their daily basting. To write the title poem for the book, I spent a lot of time reading the Exeter riddles from the Exeter manuscript, which had the right sound for me. And sometimes people wonder who the voice is who's asking the questions and then answering them. And I think of it as being the dirt itself. The dirt riddles. Tell me, what are the women and men? Weeds without roots to bind them. The houses? Helmets for the horizon, and the plows, teeth of the marching armies who drag their appetites like sacks, the field a bed where the living and dead bump bones in passing, the cow, heart of a greater creature, what happened to her years of milk, femurs for dogs to gnaw, pitchforks dressing in flies again, the graves, all coffins into bonnets. The flowers and grass going wild, thistle rising where people walk. Mold to leaven the children's bread. Some of this book is a bit like an archaeological dig. So here's one in that spirit. Buffalo bones. My father sprang the first bone loose from the sod by luck. He gripped the rib, felt it anchor. He touched the chest, the rough fur, and dug for days until he tore the beast free, the vertebrae packed tight, broken. He carried the skeleton into the scrub brush for keeping. We rode on its back under the leaves, listened to the herd travel underground, that clatter and thump of hooves. We called them like cows. We were sure they could hear our bare feet stomp the dark clouds of dirt. Later on, I actually inherited the farm. And this poem's about that. Inheritance. Rust blooms across my land. Spots like mold on white cars. Their spark plugs cold as insects, poisoned in orange powder. It's already been to the house. Screwed the preserves shut for good. In the shed, I touch the many red, ripe nail points. They pollinate the pale flowers of my hands. And I'll read just a few more. This one's a bit of a still life. Landscape with forgotten machines. Searching the creeping Charlie and wild grape, you can't tell fallen branch from axle, barbed wire from the vine that burns like a fuse through the tangle. Two box elders have twisted their trunks through a plow's rusted frame, landlocked the blades. On a hay rack's gray slats, a field of thick, dusty mold blooms. Somewhere inside these thorns and burrs, car batteries, black and juicy with acid, deflated inner tubes that stick like leeches to the dirt, and underneath the plants and junk, rust welds together the lost washer rings. Bolts hibernate like seeds. Screws burrow. On a day of severe weather like this one, I feel like I should read the next poem. I've been fairly close to a couple of tornadoes in my life. The farm where I grew up was not far from a large lake in western Minnesota, and tornadoes would form over the lake. I remember being on the road next to the lake and watching a funnel form there, and also several times when there were tornado funnels visible from the hill where our farm was. So this poem is, in a way, an amalgamation of several of those memories. Tornado junk. Above the news breaking in the ticker, we watch the funnels like a parade over our lake. Frogs like candies tossed to amateur cameramen. Boats let go on helium winds. Now, live, one's ripping its own road. We hear buzzsaw wings at work in the real distance, right outside, a fracas of glass and black noise. Afterwards, we take stock of the landscape. 20-foot-long weeds wrapped dripping around the elms. This beer bottle, green with algae, set down capped, upright, drinkable, which I point out twice before I see where the scene has taken you. Our blue car, a net of gasping fish lodged in the windshield. One eye opens against the kaleidoscope of yours, the bright tunnel slowly turning. On kissing my husband at a gas station. It's a dirty peck, quick as a feather. And now no one else in line can bear to look at us. Their gazes flutter from gum on cheap racks to bottles, or keys they clutch, careful, until we step to the counter. Then their eyes lock, hard and blank on our backs. The warm, uncomfortable spot shifts between my shoulder blades. I turn and glare at two guys long enough to break their stare, fixed now, on their worn-out Bible-black boots. It's our bad luck that they wheel onto the street right behind us, their high beams in our mirrors. We can't see the road, just that awful light accelerating in the lane behind us, their searchlight fast and cold. And the last poem I'll read is called Family Farm. Let the garden eat its own green vines. Let the yard riot back to ditch, and the field brood seedy with weeds. Someone should live there, they say. Not me, he says. Not me, she says. Not us, they agree. You. You. Whoever you are, no one knows how many violets sway underfoot out here, how much thistle. Thank you.
If you guys have questions, I'm all ears.
What poets inspired you to do like pastoral poems? Like, who did you read and whatnot?
Oh man, I read a lot of different people. I read a lot of Robert Bly, because Bly writes all these great poems about the farmland in the Midwest. James Wright, too. he's an obvious influence, I think. Ted Hughes actually had a whole bunch of poems about farm life and machines and animals that were inspiring for me when I was writing a certain subsection of the book. Later on, I found Ted Kooser, but weirdly, that was much later, even though he was a poet laureate not that long ago. Like, I, for some reason, never really read much of him, and then he was the poet laureate. Those are all guys, though. I also read Evan Boland. Do you guys know who she is? Irish feminist poet. Who, in part of her career, worked on a lot of pastorals. But I found those inspiring. Joyce Sutphen, a Minnesota poet, has pretty much like my same subject. She writes about her family's farm. And so she's kind of I feel like she's a companion voice to me. I read her poems sometimes and kind of try to talk to her because we have such similar worlds.
So you said that you hadn't read anything like what you've written in regards to growing up gay in rural Minnesota on the farm. Mm-hmm. Had you always written poetry and decided that this was sort of your book that you could publish in regards to getting your voice out there that you hadn't heard before? Or is this what you write about was specifically on the farm?
It's really both. I didn't find anyone writing this material anywhere.
Right.
And so I felt like I have this book to write. But I'm also really interested in the rural queer Midwest. Because as studies increasingly show, for example, in Kansas, as the census has improved and is tracking more gay couples in rural Kansas, they're finding that there are committed gay couples who live in that very Republican state and who are just now showing up in the census because they're willing to record themselves. And because they're so invisible, I'm really interested in what their lives are like and how gay culture seems to think that to be queer, you're supposed to move to a city because that's the only place that you can express yourself and be yourself, and maybe if you don't do that, somebody's gonna come and like string you up on a fence and murder you. I don't think that those things are culturally true anymore, but I don't think that anybody's really talking about it. So, I do expect to have, in my next book, the same landscape and some of the same concerns. So, though I don't know that the next book I'll write will be all about that.
Mm-hmm.
Probably some other subjects too.
Yeah, because you're living in the city now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm really interested in the city as a barn, actually. It's a kind of like menagerie of different creatures. And I don't think of the city as being an unnatural object in the landscape. For me, it's an organic manifestation of the humans who live here, complete with abandoned lots that have a lot of examples of wild nature. And then there's everything going on along the river, which is very uncivilized.
So where it may not be necessarily the life on farm, environmental landscape based.
Absolutely. Because strangely, I'm a poet who writes about place, and there aren't very many poets who take this as a subject. And I'm very interested in place, landscape, land, and the environment. Mm-hmm. So there'll probably be some urban pastorals for me. But I'm really interested in how like the alleys and the streets are kind of like the gutters in a barn. That's some of the stuff that I've been writing about.
I wonder if you have that point of view because of growing up in the barn, if you're able to make some of those comparisons that others may not.
I suspect so. And increasingly, experience growing up on a farm is rare. We have fewer and fewer farms, working farms, and especially small farms mm-hmm. in the U.S. than we did 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. As we've become increasingly industrialized and our modes of production have moved to these really large agribusiness farms that are high problematic.
Do you ever go visit the farm still?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my brother owns it now. My sister and I co-owned it with him for a while after our father passed away. And we ended up inheriting it really young. I was 27. I like going there now knowing that I don't have any responsibility for it. That feels really good. I like just going out there and, you know, walking around and seeing what's growing in the ditches and things like that. But it's not really a working farm anymore either. We've had it in a crop reserve program where it's wildlife habitat.
CRP?
Yep. Mm-hmm. It's a CRP program. I think I read one of the poems about the prairie plants. And walking through that field that I worked to restore up there. Yeah. Anything else you want to know?
Have you shared your book or gotten any feedback about it from people from your rural life?
Well, my mother's read it, and my grandmother apparently has now read it too, though I don't know what she thinks of it. My mother's really thrilled that she's the first poem in the book, which is kind of funny, right? she feels very special because of that, and it was the right poem to start the book, so I get points, I guess. My mother said that she thought that I had successfully written about labor on the farm in particular, that I'd gotten it just right, in her opinion, in terms of her experiences and what I read about the animals. I didn't even read all the graphic poems about the animals. Or the farm. My sister didn't have a lot to say about the book, and I'm not sure if my brother's read it. He's dyslexic, so I don't really expect that he's going to sit down and read my book of poetry. Other than the family members I've mentioned, I haven't gotten a lot of feedback from other people who were part of my life out there.
That was very enjoyable. You definitely write for the senses. It's a very clear picture that's painted with the use of all the senses. It's very,
thank you.
Very good.
Thank you. That means that. That means that I'm doing my job, because that's my goal.
Perfect.
Great. I think we're good.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.